Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and you are watching our program on WVW-TV. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate you spending a half an hour with me in the mornings, especially this morning, to talk about the news. Today, of course, is Monday, September 25th already, hard to believe, 25th, 2023. The month of September is cruising by rather quickly, and of course, in Wall Street parlance, that means Q3 is coming to an end. The third quarter. And of course, in the United States, all financial reporting is based around our filings at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which are required on a quarterly basis, even though in Europe they do it every 6 months. But quarters are important in America, and we are very much accustomed and required by law to report financials quarterly, especially with respect to the stock market and the bond market and all. So we're wrapping down the third quarter. As you know, WVW-TV is a sponsored network. We're not a commercial network. We don't sell commercials, and you're not interrupted. We're not interrupted in our programming by having to play commercials, but we're supported by generous viewers such as yourself, donors and viewers to support this network. And of course, that gives you uninterrupted content. There's no paywall, there's no subscription. You can tune in and you can hear great alternative viewpoints that are outside, sometimes outside of the mainstream media, but under our First Amendment, you get a chance to enter into the marketplace of ideas. And of course, that's what we do, at least in the Eastman Financial Report, but also throughout WVW-TV, as we bring you viewpoints and opinions and thoughts from sometimes a different perspective. And that helps you develop critical thinking skills, and it also makes you a more educated viewer and an educated citizen. When you hear both sides of an argument, that's always better than just hearing one side and then becoming a true believer, only to find out that side is wrong. So anyway, thank you for tuning in. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, my sponsor, Swiss America Trading, which is, as I like to say, a fine purveyor of precious metals. And it's an American company based in Arizona, and they make a market in precious metals. So, and of course, if you're interested in tangible precious metals like gold coins or gold bullion or, you know, coin collection coins, Swiss America has been in the business a long time. They have a great reputation. And if you're interested in finding a vendor or supplier for tangible metals, if you feel that fits your portfolio, you should give them a call or 1-800-519-6271. And ask them to send you some free information. They'll mail it right out to you. If you tell them Dan Eastman sent you, you know, they're happy to send out free information explaining the good and the bad, the pros and the cons of owning tangible precious metals. And of course, if you go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, if you use that promo code, they'll be happy to send you free information as well. You can also see, I've got it up on the screen here, you can see what they offer. What you're looking at right now are bullion coins, which are manufactured or minted by governments around the world, and these happen to be American coins, the standing Liberty half. These are coins that are made by the government to specific standards, so when you purchase a bullion coin, you can be assured that as long as you trust that government to mint the coin properly, and we do, the American government, all the governments make legitimate coins, but then you'd be owning something that's standardized. And to give you an example, Swiss America right now has got a great promotion running. They are offering these half dollar standing Liberty half dollars in silver for $13.50, and that includes shipping to your house or business. So that's a great deal. And if you're interested in adding silver to your portfolio and not having to pay shipping, this might be a great time to look into doing that. So you might want to give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to the website, use the promo code Eastman, and they'll sell you these coins for $13.50. And of course, they make great stocking stuffers as we enter into the holiday season, which I'll be talking about in my report. But at the end of the day, if you're interested in expanding your portfolio or adventuring into tangible precious metals, Swiss America is a great partner, and they're kind sponsors of our program here as well as the network. So you might want to give them a call or reach out. So give them a call, $13.50, all in, shipping included, for standing half dollars in silver. And, you know, that's if you're interested in buying some, you should certainly reach out and give them a call, because they're kind enough to support us. You know, it's helpful if you look at their products. So thank you very much. Okay, we're going to move into the news today. And let me talk about a little bit about gift giving to begin with. That's why I sort of led with that. There's a story out today. There's all sorts of people who sample consumer sentiment, because as we know, we are designated to be consumers. You know, I like to think of myself as a productive citizen, but I'm in the consumer box because apparently it's my duty to earn money, pay half of it in taxes, and spend the other half on stuff. And that's how I do my share to keep the economy humming. I'm not a big consumer fan. I don't think people should be called consumers, because I'd like to think we have more value to society than merely spending every nickel we get and then racking up the credit cards to keep the economy humming. But the reality is, consumers in America spend a lot of money. And there are companies that sample this, because what they want to know is what is the future retail sales look like, you know? And you got to sample the consumers. So you get, like, I think it's the University of Michigan as a consumer sentiment analysis, and other groups are sampling and testing what is the appetite for consumers to consume. And of course, I noticed a number that was very interesting, that those who sample such things are concluding that the appetite for consuming into the holiday season is down rather dramatically. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, because these consumers are saying they're going to be spending about 30% less going into the holiday spending season. And of course, what is the holiday spending season? Well, back in the olden days, it was the Christmas gift giving season. But really, when retail analysts are looking, there are cycles to spending in America. Believe it or not, the biggest kickoff is back to school spending. And, you know, the kids get out in May or June or wherever, they finally start their summer vacation. And lo and behold, by mid-August, it's back to school. And that is a phenomenal amount of dollars, because I suppose, you know, the kids have to look good going back, and they need books and pencils and paper and rulers and all sorts of fun things for advancing their scholastic careers, you know, from kindergarten all the way up to, I suppose, postgraduate school. But back to school spending is a big deal. And that kicks off in August, because schools start in August, September, or somewhere in that area. And then, of course, we race through, and Halloween has become kind of an interesting phenomenon. People buy a lot of stuff to celebrate Halloween. And, you know, that's kind of interesting, because from my faith tradition of being a Lutheran, we look at Halloween as being the day that Martin Luther nailed the 95 Theses to the door of the church in Wittenberg, Germany, and which set off probably, well, I guess if you're looking for spooky events on Halloween, that may have triggered a 500-year nightmare for the Vatican. And perhaps if you look, you know, that was a very interesting thing. So we tend to focus on Halloween as being, you know, sort of the beginning of the Reformation. But a lot of people are very secular. They don't look at that. And certainly the Catholics think it's a horror show. But at the end of the day, Halloween's spending has become a big thing, and people like to put up pumpkins and monsters and whatever they put on their lawns, and that's a thing. Then you move into, of course, Thanksgiving, which is lots of food. We all love food. Thanksgiving is a great holiday. It's a multi-secular, non-sectarian holiday where everybody gives thanks, and it's great. And then, of course, you blast right through Christmas, and that's where people are spending money on Christmas and Hanukkah gifts, and all sorts of celebrations are going on. So we look at our consumer spending window from August through December, I guess September 24th, unless you're, you know, late in your shopping, then maybe you get the after Christmas specials. But certainly by the end of the year, everybody, you know, you go to your New Year's party and you're pretty well done spending until later in the next year. So the point is, we look at these numbers, and when the analysts are analyzing the numbers, you want to decide, from a consumer energy perspective, the American economy can be up to 80% consumer driven. People buy stuff and buy stuff and buy stuff. And it's not to say I'm a miser and I don't buy stuff, because I do, but I just don't like to be labeled a consumer. I like to think of myself as a human being. Okay. But the point is, if the projections are down, people will spend 30% less between back to school in August, which was the last month, and December. That what it tells you, and if you read between the lines and continuing to develop your critical thinking skills, what it's telling you is that the consumer economy is slowing. And of course, this has to do with the very high energy rates. It has to do with this amazing phenomenon of these student loans kicking in, which, this has been a real impact. People stopped paying that during COVID, and I'm sure it was very helpful to have a holiday, but the interest kept compiling. And of course, now your student loan balance is bigger than ever. The monthly payments kick in, and there are programs that you can sort of negotiate yourself to interest only. But at the end of the day, this is hundreds of dollars. It can be $100, it can be $1,000 a month, but it is taking a major bite out of consumers. And these consumers tend to be the younger people who are out of college and into the workforce, and they're trying to juggle a mortgage, car payments, food, clothing, daycare, whatever. And now all of a sudden you've got this big chunk coming as well. The only possibility for the consumer is to either, cut back on, maybe cut back on restaurant spending or other discretionary spending to start into the consumer season, or basically put it on the credit card, which is really bad because then you're racking up credit card debt at 29% interest, whatever, or forego spending. And I think what we're starting to see is that is starting to wiggle back toward people cutting back, because there's a lot of demand on the wallet of the consumer, where and then of course we saw the story of the 6.5% increase next year in health insurance premiums. And of course, the people who have student loans and they have mortgages and they have cars and they have, grocery budgets, they also pay a portion of their paycheck to the part of the premium. It could be a quarter, half, whatever your employer has set up. But if you know that's going to be up 6.5% next year, and you still have your deductibles that start in January, the consumer is starting to get really squeezed. And of course, that's never a good thing when you're going into an election year for president, because this is, you want to have nothing but, a chicken in every pot. And what you're going to end up with is no pot and no chicken, because people are really starting to get squeezed. So the purpose of this discussion, of course, is to think about at the aggregate level, the macro level, or the national income level, what is happening. And if you look at growth within that cycle with massive debt, not only a consumer debt, but also, unfortunately, our $33 trillion in government debt, there's starting to become a real debt overhang and debt service overhang that is going to impact rather dramatically the economy over the next couple of years. And that's why you want to be thinking about this double-edged sword, or double-headed hammer, or whatever, of inflation raising prices. And we know from the Federal Reserve's actions last week that they're still very concerned about 3.7 or 4.2 core or regular inflation, which is, they say, still too high. So there's still, they still have the Federal Reserve hammer saying, next year early, we might just bump this up one more time, which I think politically, remember, this is not a political show, it's an economic show. But, if I were running for reelection and the Federal Reserve says, first part, as the primaries are shaping up, we're going to crank the rates again, that politically probably isn't going to sit real well in, 1600 Pennsylvania. So anyway, we want to watch this and see what happens. But I think from a we the people perspective, what do you do to take care of yourself? And I guess I don't give any financial advice, I don't give any stock picking advice at all, but good common sense might suggest that tidying up your personal balance sheet, reducing your debt, and trimming the sails as the storm blows in might not be a bad thing to do, because ultimately, we're all responsible for our own economic decisions. And, you know, you can see that very interesting with student loan phenomena, because this is a thing, you know, students, the universities keep raising these tuition rates, and the books, you know, the textbooks are very expensive. And of course, in the old days, you know, I don't want to say poor, but a college student who didn't have a lot of family money or a lot of assets basically would go off to college in rags, and you'd live with 15 other people, and you'd eat noodles, and, you know, you'd spend, you know, you wouldn't spend money because you didn't have money. And when beer went on sale, that was the best day of the week. And people were very frugal. But with the change in psychology of universities, where universities went from being a center of intellectual development, and there's colleges and universities all over America. If you look at the Midwest, they're all scattered, all these little private colleges, all started by religious organizations with the idea that you would take a high school graduate and you would put them through a four-year program of that was shaped around your belief system, primarily a Christ-centered belief system, because these tended to be all Christian denominations opening colleges. And then you had the secular public, with schools, the universities, which were based around secular knowledge, like the state universities would teach you how to be a farmer or a miner or basically an education based upon economic activity. And then, of course, the universities of, you know, those were where the cerebral people went, you know, to think about Socrates and all that other deep stuff. But those systems are all in place and emerged as a result of that expansion. So when you go off and you start thinking about college today, it's no longer this, you know, you struggle through living in cheap environment, ride a bicycle and come out with a degree, and then you go out into the economy. College has become an event or an experience. Maybe that's a better word. It's an experience. You go off to college, you have the experience. Those of us who've been off to college, it was a great experience. We had a great time. It was fun, lots of fun, and that's how you go from being a little kid to an adult. And, you know, if you can kind of, you know, keep yourself from falling off the cliff, you basically, you know, you grow, and then you become, you know, a member of society. Well, when college became an experience, and then it became a status symbol, and at that point, it became extraordinarily competitive. And when it became competitive, it became crazy competitive. And the universities realized that they had the ability, because it's pricing elasticity at that point. You know, you can raise your rates and people will still, you know, knock on the door to come. And if you look at the Ivy Leagues and the, you know, the tier one universities, man, they could charge $100,000 a year. People will just do, you know, they go to, you know, these kids go to, high school kids are going to special classes to help them get into, you know, Harvard and Yale and all the big places. And they do, you know, all practice interviewing, and they run around and do all this charity work. Whatever they could do is a competitive edge to get into these big name schools. Well, that is worth it to them. And they don't care what the tuition is, because they just borrow the money. And then you can come out of, you know, Harvard or Yale or someplace, you know, Stanford, and then, you know, be a successful person. Well, as those big places are raising, because they realize this is price inelasticity. This is a classic economic example of, if you've got something somebody wants, you can charge. That's why, you know, like a Rolls Royce is so expensive. I mean, everybody would love to have a Rolls Royce, wouldn't you? But, you know, not for $250,000. So when you have something that, you know, that is scarce, and hard to get into, and they restrict to create this pent-up demand, and then they just let a few people in, and they pay the big price, you get the biggest price you can. Well, all the other universities watch that model, and they say, oh boy, you know, let's see, you know, Harvard's charging $1 million a week, we'll charge $800,000 a week, you know, metaphorically. But, you know, and it just lifts and lifts and lifts, to the point where somebody who just wants to go to a local state university and get a four-year degree and then go out and get a job, you're looking at eye-popping numbers. And then, of course, instead of lending the money just for tuition, if these programs were set up right, when you borrowed student loan money, it would go to the purser or treasurer of the university or the college. Okay, I borrowed the tuition. It's crazy tuition. It's $27,000 a year or something, but all right, I borrowed it. Okay. And then everything else would be, you'd need a part-time job, or you'd have to have, you know, some help from your relatives, or you sweep the floors or something. But they don't. They give you the money, and then, well, you have to have a car. And that's why they buy, you know, you know, borrow money on a student loan, buy a car. And then, of course, you're no education is complete unless you've spent 6 months traveling the globe. You know? So they're funding these exotic vacations, and then you get a few credits because you go to a class somewhere. The point is, they're funding lifestyle and education. So when you come rolling out of college and you got $150,000 in debt, that's you have basically funded a 4-year experience. Okay, it's an experience. It's not an education, although experiences are an education. But at the end of the day, there are two paths. There is a prudent path, and then there is the let's borrow 150 grand, have a great time for 4 years. I'll get a job and figure out how to pay it off later. Well, the later has come. Okay, and this is the problem. If you look at the levels of student debt, and of course the federal government steps in through Sallie Mae and other mechanisms, they guarantee it. So, you know, no bank is going to lend money to somebody who doesn't have a job and is partying in Europe half the year. But they will if the federal government guarantees it. And they looked at the FHA, you know, and there's Freddie Mac and Sallie Mae, or Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and they guaranteed mortgages so people could get a mortgage who otherwise wouldn't qualify, and the government insures the mortgage if they default. They said, hey, let's do the same thing with student loans. Well, the default rate on student loans is very, very high. And at the end of the day, that's why Congress changed the law that basically said you can file for bankruptcy, but you can't discharge student loan. You're going to be paying this back, and your constitutional right to go bankrupt with a fresh start every 7 years, that's out the window. It doesn't apply to credit cards, interestingly, and it doesn't apply to student loans. So you rack up credit card debt and student loan debt, there's no escape. There's no escape. And if you don't pay, they will come and they will garnish your wages. They will attach your assets. If you have a house, they will, you know, file a lien. You must pay that back. And this is a real difficult, you know, come to reality for a lot of young people whose parents, oh boy, my son or daughter's getting into the big fancy university, you know, borrow, borrow, borrow. You can pay it back when you graduate. Well, sometimes you can. I mean, you get yourself a degree in medicine or, you know, maybe law, I don't know, or engineering or computer coding. You might be able to, you know, finance yourself a great 4-year experience and then get a job as a computer coder, and they give you stock because they can't afford to pay you a paycheck, and your stock goes to the moon, you become a billionaire. I mean, you know, that happens to, you know, one or two people, but for the vast majority, you're kind of caught in a situation where you're stuck. And that's why it's really an interesting question if we're a consumer society and our economy is based upon 80% of its consumers consuming. Well, the student loan guys got to the money first, okay? And the retail shops were late to the game because the more you can load people up and capture their earnings early on, the less there is going to be for entertainment and fancy dining and, you know, all the other stuff that costs a lot of money. So it's really an interesting thing. If you're, you know, you, if you know, if you want to convey, you know, valuable information to young people, that's of course what I did for 9 years at the, you know, teaching in college, you know, is basically be very, very careful about racking up debt. You know, study hard, get good grades, graduate, eat noodles, you know, walked, ride a bike, don't drive your own Mercedes or BMW to college. You know, you better plan as part of your 4 years of education how not to commit financial you know, disaster so that you graduate, you spend the rest of your life paying off debt rather than consuming. See, so really the people who make their living bringing in consumer dollars should be more and more concerned about fewer and fewer consumer dollars available for the educated portion of, well, the people with college degrees who tend to make money and go out and live a, you know, they consume a lot. If their consumer dollar was captured before they became a freshman in college, then there's a lot less at the shopping mall. And I think that's, you know, there's only so many dollars that go around. And then keep in mind the debt burden and the tax burden put a lot of strain on a lot of Americans. And this debt burden is becoming a really, really difficult thing. And I would submit that the tax burden is going to go up because you remember the last round of tax cuts in Washington during the Trump administration. Of course, the, you know, the conservative crowd, yeah, cut the taxes, it's good for the economy. And it is, it gives you more money to spend. But, you know, the liberal faction is, you know, oh my gosh, we've got this, you know, all this stuff to pay for. And you know, there's truth to both sides. The problem is right now we're stuck in a box with $33 trillion in debt. And that's $1 trillion a year in debt service that the federal government has to collect from the taxpayers and pay to the bondholders before you get to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, defense budget. And that's why we're looking at $1.7 trillion in deficit. Could be as close to $2 trillion in deficit in 1 year. I think last week I talked about federal deficit, $1.7 trillion in 3 months. And you think, how can that be? I mean, how can they spend that much money? Well, you know, we're now looking into the political window again. Of, you know, we're in, you know, the gridlock of shutting down the government September 30th. That's 5 days, right? Including today, that's 6 days. Okay. You know, what is going to happen when the government shuts down? Well, the answer is nothing. I mean, this is like the snowball at the top of the mountain that has now hit the critical mass that triggers the avalanche. And you're not stopping that snowball. I suppose they could zap it from outer space with a laser or something and maybe melt it, but that's pretty radical. And the question is, how do you deal with this government shutdown thing when nobody really understands it? All they have to do is pass continuing resolutions to keep spending like a bunch of, I don't know if you can, but, you know, like a bunch of spendthrifts. And they can't even get to that because they're negotiating. Well, we'll spend this if you do this. They are negotiating the position of the lounge chairs on the Titanic in some respects. It really doesn't matter because you've got 11 continuing resolutions that have to be passed in 6 days to keep the government open. Whether they do that or not, it doesn't matter because you're still spending vastly more money than anybody's collecting. And that's why we know that the next tax cycle, when Congress again figures out the tax bill, in order to cover this exploding deficit that's now $33 trillion, there's only a couple of ways you can deal with that. Number one is you can raise taxes on everyone. Well, great. Now you've got student loans and you've got higher taxes yet, which means lower take-home pay. Gasoline is up. Food is up. You got inflation pushing. The consumer, who's pretty thinly stretched to begin with, that will snap because there's only so many dollars you can squeeze. You're going to be pushing people into default situations. They can't get out of their credit cards. They can't get out of their student loans. You can still default on a mortgage and they'll come and take your house. So you'll be sleeping on a park bench with student loan debt and credit card debt. You know, and I actually could repossess your park bench. I don't know. Well, it's interesting times. But what it tells you is this stuff is out of balance. And when you look at Congress for the second time in this year, you know, saying we're going to shut down the government, at some point, you have to start to think maybe perhaps the people running our federal government, the political system will not allow rational spending. It won't allow budgets. It won't allow discipline. It won't allow constraint. It won't allow anyone politically to change the paradigm. This thing is on a roll, and the people in Congress aren't able to manage it. Now, you can argue their philosophy. The Democrats want to just spend. And the question is it just Santa Claus and steroids, or is there, let's just spend it until it's over and break the system? Remember, you know, one of our former presidents said fundamentally change America. Well, yeah, if you want to go broke, that'll fundamentally change your life, I guarantee you. And is that what's happening on that side versus the other side? Some people are saying, you got to cut spending, you got to get this back into balance. Well, that's like, that argument is like 20 years too late. So what do you do? So, oh, we're going to raise taxes and balance the budget. Great. Then nobody's going to have, you're going to have 5 cents a week to live on in a roaring inflationary economy, and people are going to really lose it. Or, and this is why I always come back to, what is the only solution? I've spent so much time, analyzing all these great political thinkers here, economic thinkers, and as a hard money Austrian, and somebody who's interested in that philosophy. I don't think any philosophy is the ultimate thing. The only thing that's fundamentally true is scripture, okay? Everything else is somebody's opinion. But my sense is that the way out that is always taken by governments in a panic is inflation. That if you inflate your way out of this, you're going to, all the fixed income people, basically, that's the societal roadkill. If you look what happened in the Soviet Union after the collapse and the remonetization of a new ruble, everybody on those fixed Soviet pensions, which was your right as a Soviet citizen or whatever they were, they just got wiped off financially. And of course, they all died off, and that was the end of it. They just society moved on. And so you really want to be thinking very carefully, if that breaks, how do you preserve your buying power, your purchasing power? And that's why tangible assets matter. It may not be a perfect solution, but, I remember back in, when the silver went up, oh man, it was back in the 1970s. People were selling off their silver, sterling silver spoons, because they were amazed that they went up in such value. And, oh, you got such, $700 for this, And at the end of the day, the silver's recycled into the world economy, and they're $700 today. $700 in the 70s was a big number. Today, not so much. So you might want to be thinking about, how do you protect yourself? And I think that's another good reason to maybe just give Swiss America a call, get the information, or, or buy some real estate or something. Well, anyway, my time is up for today. We will watch Congress diligently tomorrow, and we'll see what happens to the, whether the government's going to shut down or not. But anyway, have a great day. Thanks so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.